Yes, the Pivotonian Theatre. I was there last night watching a movie called The Dry. The Dry is interesting, very good feedback about it. I left a little bit confused. Excuse me. The script, as I would think, it had a few holes in it, but still quite enjoyable. I'd still go along and watch it and see what you thought about it, but it was one that I left shaking my head a little bit. As I said before the break, we're going to talk about money, huge amounts of money, and what people who acquire it, and maybe even how they acquire it, and then what they do with it after they've got hold of it. Jeff Bezos is leaving Amazon with personal wealth of somewhere near $182 billion. To help us sort of comprehend that that pile of money, a gentleman from Perth in Western Australia, Stuart Wesley, is going to join us to tell us about wealth accumulation. Stuart, good morning and thank you for your time.
Good morning, Rob, and good morning to your listeners.
I appreciate it that it is 7:40 in Perth. We're 10:40 here and fairly civilised, so we appreciate the extra effort you've put in to join us on what is... Look, it's a fascinating subject because we all chase great wealth. We buy Tats Lotto tickets, we back the Melbourne Cup winner, and all of those things. We're trying to accumulate great wealth. We do investments and stuff without having any other motive other than to want to make for a better life for ourselves. But when you get a pile that's $182 billion, the focus has probably taken off a little bit about personal comfort. Just try and help us understand what would be going through the mind of someone that's working away building up that.
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know that anyone, you know, an ordinary human like you and I could possibly get our minds around $182 billion. One of the things I do is start to think about, well, what would my dreams be and how much would that cost? And there's so much left over, it's just ridiculous. So it's a very large number to get your head around, and I'm not sure we can do it.
Over the journey of life, we've known people that have set out with a purpose in life to build a business, carry on a family business. Sometimes it happens accidentally, the success. They get onto a model that it might even surprise them, and things build up around them. And it clearly puts them in a completely different mindset to what they're expecting. Now, with that, some people are very community conscious and are great givers, but there is another group that it's almost a game to them. Would that be fair to suggest?
Yeah, it is. And I think the question that you start to ask is, well, what is the purpose of the money? So I've got a lot of money. What am I going to do with it? And in fact, someone asked me that question 4 or 5 years ago, and it was just around $100,000. So if you had that, Stuart, what would you do with it? Great question. A really great question. And so this idea of meaning and purpose when you have wealth is really important. And some people address that well and have big plans and big aspirations, and others don't.
Yeah, this is the thing that I certainly don't think that way. I would like to think that I'm a community conscious person, and if that sort of stuff came accidentally in my laps, it will certainly you'd probably make sure you had a nice house and a nice car. Outside of that, all you got to do is make sure you got 3 meals a day, and maybe the family are looked after. But you immediately then start thinking, well, what can I do to make this a better place to be? We've got to give Jeff Bezos in particular the benefit of the doubt. He may become one of the great philanthropic characters of the world in a few months, as I suppose Bill Gates is another one that's done a lot of really good stuff with his wealth. But you'd think once you got to 10 billion, 20 billion, you're never going to spend it logically in your life. So is it just to them the game of personal internal success that continues to drive them?
Oh, look, I think it's going to be different for different people. I think that's probably true for some. I think others just get caught up in it. Here's what I do. It works. It makes a lot of money, and it just keeps going. So it becomes this self-perpetuating type existence. But one of the things I've given quite a bit of thought to is what is enough? And, you know, Rob, people say, oh, you know, money's a burden. And I've always thought, oh, give me a crack at it. I'll be all right. But what I've come to learn is that there's an amount of money that is comfortable and gives you a good life, you know, a comfortable life, even maybe an abundant life. And then there's an amount of money that is actually quite a burden, and then it comes into, what am I going to do with this? And my encouragement, of course, is think about, you know, what's going on inside of you? What's important to you? What do you get energetic about? Where do you see the pain points in the world? And start to listen to that inner voice that is calling you to do something. And I've got to say, you know, you don't need to have a lot of wealth to be thinking that way. In fact, I think all of us have, you know, an abundance within us, you know, not just with money, but we have an abundance within us that we can give to others if we've got the mindset to do it.
Yeah, I think one of the concerning things about the Jeff Bezos story, and these, of course, are all allegedly, but allegedly his staff are on the very minimum wages at the distribution centres. Allegedly they have no staff healthcare. But one of the worst I've heard during the COVID time, where things were getting quite busy, that they allegedly were sent to their workstations with large plastic bottles so that they didn't have to leave their workstation to go to the toilet. Now, that sort of stuff, if that's true, that paints a slightly different picture to the drive of the building of the wealth, and it takes away any connection to any part of the world other than one's own inner self, and that paints a sad picture.
It does paint a sad picture, and, you know, I don't have really any comment on Jeff Bezos. I don't know the guy. I've heard those sorts of stories as well. I guess where my mind goes to is simply to say, let's turn our attention outward. There's a lot of need in the world. Let's turn our attention outward, no matter how much wealth we've got, to be generous toward others. And that, you know, I'm actually on the oval at our local cricket club, you know, and there's people here who give time to serve in the community. That's philanthropic. And then I'm involved with people that are doing global initiatives to, you know, mitigate climate change and things like that. I think it's a mindset.
Yes, it is quite interesting. That topic, I'm glad you made a sporting connection there, because that's very much me. I've spent a huge part of my life at cricket grounds, playing, coaching, in administrational roles, and I've got very frustrated over the years at the growth of the two big models in Australia, let's say the AFL football model and the Cricket Australia model, that is totally underpinned by people like yourself and your friends at your local cricket club. Because if you all decided to stay at home, that entire business model just falls to the ground. And
yeah,
it's amazing to note that the power you have in your community simply by volunteering.
Absolutely, and I think we can get into this mindset. Well, it's a scarcity mindset, really. Well, I haven't got enough, so until I've got enough, I won't give. And you know, I just really challenge that. I think, but you know, not all of us have enough. You know, we can all point to areas of our lives where we need more, but we do have resources in us that we can contribute. And if you're a billionaire, multi-billionaire, you've got a lot of financial resources. But if you're ordinary, everyday people like us, you have resources as well.
Some people who've done some really good things have worked outside of government to provide assistance to communities, both their own, locally, nationally, and even internationally. Some very famous names have gone around the red tape and just got things done where they've seen a need. Does it cause you a little bit of frustration that perhaps the great accumulation of wealth can't work better with governments, and even governments working together, when you see food being ploughed into the ground while we still have nations starving to death? It's a real frustration for me.
Yes, absolutely. Me too, and probably every sort of sane person walking around, it is a frustration. What do we do about it?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's about getting the right minds together and having political will to make change. But at the moment, you're talking about individuals being self-indulgent first before they give of others. But sadly, as I've gone through my 63 years, I've seen leaders and even governments being the same, which is sort of perpetrating the problem of the gap between the haves and the have-nots. Or, well, when I say haves and have-nots, but there's probably plenty of people who, it's probably 40% of the population who live very comfortably, but there seems to be a very small percentage at the top who just accumulating these huge numbers to the, at the detriment to the bottom, which is a, in essence, is a pretty simple thing to do. Just gather some food that's not otherwise going to be used and take it to some people who need to be fed.
Which could be the neighbour next door. And
yes, they're correct.
And I think what I'd want to say is that there are those people that are accumulating vast sums of money, and there are the people that are accumulating vast sums of money that are thinking very clearly and carefully and engaging with government. And that's one of the things their wealth can help them do. It gives them access to be able to engage at the high levels to get things done. And certainly in my experience, I'm seeing people actively doing that, and it's pretty inspiring to watch. And, you know, I think it would be terrible to cast any slur over, you know, everybody who has money in that box. There are people doing fantastic.
Yeah, there certainly is, and that's not. And if I've given that indication, I apologise, because it's not what I'm thinking. Definitely not. I think there's some wonderful stuff happening in our country and around the world.
Yeah, no, there is. There is, and I have seen some of it, and it's fantastic.
So, Stuart, tell us a bit about your life, what you do, and how you give to give yourself that wonderful warm, fuzzy internal feel.
Warm, fuzzy internal feel. Well, I am standing down at our cricket club, and I do contribute there. I've had a long history involved in churches and the community development work that goes along with that. And in our business at the moment, we work in people and culture. And so we're constantly, you know, whether it be for-profit or not-for-profit enterprises, we are constantly involved just helping people function well, helping people build relational maturity that can kind of lead to high performance. And I have to say, whether I'm being paid well or not well, seeing people flourish as a result of the work we do, is that's the payoff, really.
Stuart, just on that, you touched on the fact that you're involved in churches, and interestingly, in my time, like some big corporations and individuals like the Jeff Bezoses, sometimes even the churches have become a little bit protective and self-indulgent in their original purpose. But it's good to see that people at your level are still doing what the church environment, certainly in my youth, did well, and that was engage with and improve their parish.
Yeah, and I think at the grassroots, a lot of that is, that's what mostly happens. And then there are some examples you see that are maybe not good examples, but by and large, churches are people trying to follow God and do good in the world. And that's the vast majority, in my experience.
Yeah, and similarly, I always found that my work at a cricket club was similar to a church. It was a community asset that brought people together for a common cause to support each other. There was a need to raise money for that to happen, and people worked together to do that as well. So without the religious component, the raw religious component, sporting clubs do a very, very similar purpose.
Well, yeah, and I think there's a pretty religious component about sporting.
Yeah, well, it certainly can be, yes.
But you're right. North Beach Karen Cricket Club is a community. It's a community of people that play sport together, but they support each other, they encourage each other, they have friendships, you know, and it's just part of the central fabric of our society, isn't it, that sort of organisation.
And I guess in Perth we could extend that then to West Coast Eagles v Fremantle Dockers, and we see it in other states where that support is rabid and it becomes a little tribal, but hopefully still in a in a friendly way. And I suppose you've got a little bit of an eye on the footy and the importance of those two entities in the Perth region or Western Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I try and hold my love of the West Coast Eagles in check, as opposed to my perhaps not so much love of the other team.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've got that history over there with those two entities, as in Victoria, the Carlton Collingwood thing, or
yes.
Carlton Richmond, and certainly in South Australia, where the Port Adelaide Football Club felt aggrieved when the Adelaide Crows started without them. So that division in that town is quite extraordinary. It'll be every bit as similar to what you've got going on in Perth, and it still remains kept in check, a great part of the game of football, but also the cultural aspects of a good society.
Yeah, and what you're pointing to there, Rob, what sort of that sparks for me is, you know, this idea of tribalism. You know, our ability, you know, and we've seen this in the US with the US elections just recently, and such a divided nation. And, you know, our ability to listen to a counter point of view and our ability to listen to that person as a legitimate other, you know, and to value them even though they hold a different view, and listen to the concerns that are underneath the positions they hold. This is something that I feel so passionate about, actually, across, you know, no matter your level of wealth, which is where we started this conversation, just being able to listen and get into the shoes of other people.
Perception is reality, Stuart, is my little life motto along that exact theme of understanding the different views that are around you. And once you do that, it's a lot easier to communicate, isn't it?
Yeah, and even if I disagree, that I can actually hold my ground, disagree with you, and we still have respect for each other. And, you know, I can think of people I profoundly disagree with, and we can still sit down and have a coffee and a chat, and it's good. We just disagree on some issues, and we're listening to each other. I think that is a skill we need to largely relearn in our broader culture, to be honest.
Do you think the COVID pandemic, which you're probably in, maybe in the worst part of it now, your government, I think, has done a fantastic job to keep its citizens safe and out of harm's way.
Yeah.
But do you think that the changes to society during this period of time will be positive for the future?
Well, it remains to be seen, I suppose. I don't really know. I mean, there's so much that has changed, even, you know, moving to the online space in terms of, you know, even my work, the calls that we do. I don't quite know how to answer that, actually.
Yeah, there might not be as much congestion over there, but I see a lot of positives. On this side of the state, I think people are probably more aware of each other. I've been really impressed the way we've worked as a community in Melbourne during the lockdowns. Not that I'm in Melbourne, but to witness it. We've certainly done it well in Geelong, where we've looked to protect each other as well as ourselves. And hopefully it will be ongoing. I've seen some real positives with it.
Well, and my point there would be, you know, I totally agree. And, you know, when I watched the Super Bowl, we hear the reports of the Super Bowl in the US recently, and half of the crowd are going without masks on. And you compare that to what we've witnessed in Perth in the last couple of weeks. It's night and day, and I think in Australia we're still demonstrating how we do care for each other.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good thing. Stuart, we've run out of time. I'd love to chat with you again in the future. It's been nice to meet you on the telephone, and we really appreciate your sensible and balanced chat.
Thanks for your time, Rob.
Good on you. All the very best. That is it for...